It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Caitlin Glover. Caitlin's with NCBA and the Public Lands Council. And Caitlin, it's always good to see you.
Great to see you too.
Okay, let's start with this because you and I've had the opportunity to have this conversation in the past, but not everybody knows what PLC stands for and what it is you're doing. So what's the elevator speech?
So the elevator pitch is that if you're a cattle or a sheep producer in the Western United States, a lot of the grass, a lot of the forage that you use is probably found on federal land, managed or owned by the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service. And so while I do work for NCBA, I also wear a second hat representing those unique rights and interests of those producers who hold federal grazing permits. And that's what the PLC is all about. The Public Lands Council has a very niche, a very specific set of issues for those cattle and sheep producers who use that federal forage, but also have a more complicated management scenario because their landlord or their partner is the federal government.
I just wonder if the past week in Washington, D.C. has helped you tell the story a little easier to those who've never really dealt with some of the issues that the Western states deal with, i.e. wildfires. Has it helped?
It has helped. You know, I think when we think about Washington, we often talk about Washington, D.C. being so far removed from real America, right? That members of Congress come from their home districts, come from their home states. Even those of us who work here usually come from somewhere else, right? You know, they're the few special locals, right? But we all come from somewhere else, and so we bring a set of backgrounds, a set of issues with us that aren't always immediately visible when you're here on the East Coast. Last week, obviously, was the exception with wildfire smoke from Canada. And even though they weren't American wildfires, it gave us a really good opportunity to talk about why this sort of ongoing discussion about whether it's forest management or whether it's climate change or whether it's something else, the bottom line is that something needs to be done. And there's a lot of bipartisan agreement on certain pieces. But it gave us a really great opportunity to talk about reduced forage or reduced fuel, right? The role that grazing can play in reducing that wildfire risk, and even making sure that good fire doesn't become bad fire across those millions of acres across the West. It's always a hard story to tell, Tony, and I think it's, you know, it's certainly one that I'd rather not tell, certainly one that I wish I didn't have to tell, but it's something that our producers live day in and day out, and so it's something that we'll continue to talk about here until we have more durable fixes.
So you mentioned good fire, bad fire. So that's an important piece of this puzzle because I think a lot of times we just throw fire into all fire's bad, and it's not really necessarily the case. You also hit on another great point, and that's the grazing and how just being able to graze those federal lands really can help us eliminate some of the wildfires. Did I answer the question there? Did I give you any room still to talk?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly right. You know, so we talk about grazing in a couple different ways. You know, we talk about grazing as a use. So one of the things that is key to the production of beef, of lamb, of wool in the West is that forage, the grass that feeds the cows and sheep, to be able to make a commodity, to be able to make a product that ranchers then sell and then benefit, you know, the American food system and textiles, of course, as well. But we don't often talk in sort of the general public about that other side, too, about the management of the landscape that comes from that grazing. So grazing is both a use of these public lands, but it's also a management tool. And so really marrying those two sides, making sure that we're able to optimize the product that's coming out, the beef, the lamb, the wool, but also optimize the land management goals. When you can do both of those things at the same time, you hit a sweet spot. You hit this concept of what's called multiple use and sustained yield. So you're using a lot of landscapes for a lot of different things, but still having a predictable and sustained yield for those products over time. So it's all about predictability. And, you know, I would argue it's all about sustainability. How do these things work together? And how can we make sure that federal regulation supports that?
Okay. So when we talk about those rules or managing those lands, BLM, Bureau of Land Management. What's happening with the Bureau of Land Management right now? What are you watching?
So, I mean, that's a great question, right? Because there are a lot of things going on at the Bureau of Land Management right now, but there are a few key things, I think, that really have been top of mind. For the last year or so, we've been talking about how the agency is going to revise grazing regulations. So again, talking about that access, the access to forage, and the rules that govern grazing on federal lands. Then we talk about things like lesser prairie chicken and Gunnison sage grouse and greater sage grouse and all of the other species that you manage with and around with grazing. But really what we've been watching for about the last 2 months is a new proposed rule. The BLM sort of out of nowhere published this proposed rule, didn't really give anybody any heads up. There certainly was no advanced discussion about contents, which is quite unusual for a rule of this nature. And what it does is it changes the way the BLM would manage these hundreds of millions of acres across the West. It's really concerning for cattle and sheep producers and anybody who's in that other multiple use scenario, mining, forestry, any other energy development, but also the hikers, the bikers, the mountain bikers and the trail runners, right? Anybody who recreates, hunters and fishers, fishermen. And so it's all of that combined into one proposed rule that when you don't have that advanced discussion, it's kind of concerning. So we've been watching that very closely. We've been leading engagement for the grazing industry, as well as coordinating other multiple use groups, because there are some parts of this rule that are pretty concerning for what the future looks like.
Does it bring us full circle, because we started with the idea of Washington, D.C., really as a melting pot of the United States from different areas? Maybe sometimes rules are well-intended, but they're maybe originated by somebody who doesn't really understand. Is that where really NCBA and PLC come in?
It is. So we, groups like ours, play a few different roles. One is sort of the watchdog, right? Because there are a lot of rules, a lot of regulations that come into play that, again, you know, the devil's in the details. They may look good on paper, but they just might not work in the country. But we also play the role of translator, right? What they mean in the country, but also what the country's priorities are coming back to these agencies. And that's particularly important on a proposed rule like this one, where you look at the proposed rule entitled Conservation and Landscape Health and think, that's great. We all love conservation. We all want better landscape health. But then you take a look at each of the provisions and notice that conservation leasing, as it's proposed in the rule, has never really been done before on federal land. And oh, by the way, it could preclude other activities. It could force grazing or mining or recreation off of federal land. Might sound great to have the public more involved in these processes, but what would it actually mean on the landscape, and how would it work in real time? That's where we play the role of organizing this engagement, of educating members of Congress and really pointing them in the right direction for how to represent their own constituents. On this proposed rule, our role looks a lot like fighting back against some of the agencies, I think what they would call their best ideas, but really still being constructive, because as they have done for the past 50 years, hopefully we'll look ahead into the next 50 years as to the agencies as partners. We want to prevent things like this proposed rule that would eliminate or undercut or compromise that partnership. We have to be good partners to them, right? And they need to be good partners to us as well.
And for anybody who is maybe sitting there and just thinking, well, I don't run any, I'm not grazing on BLM lands, not even in the West, this isn't really relevant to me. I would imagine it is relevant.
That's exactly right. there's a reason that national organizations like NCBA or the American Sheep Industry Association, even America Outdoors or the partnerships of Rangeland Trusts, there's a reason these national groups are so concerned about this proposed rule. And it really centers for the grazing industry in one simple or two simple issues, right? You think about what grass or what hay, what forage feeds these animals. And you think about where that forage is concentrated. When we're in a drought year like we were last year, hay prices go through the roof. And so to replace that lost forage that you find on 155 million acres across the West for BLM landscape, be a heck of a lot of hay, right? And so you think about loss of access to forage, the cost or the ability to replace that forage lost. Really what you're talking about is not a replacement of forage, but a condensing of that Western herd. You have a contraction, any sort of herd contraction across the West, that has massive ripple effects across the country. You think about where a lot of cow-calf operations are, especially at scale, they're in the West. And so that has knock-on effects all the way through the supply chain. But there's one other thing, too, and we typically talk about it with the Endangered Species Act, ESA, you know, how the federal government touches or is in impacting individual producers or individual production operations. And that's really that what happens in the West, what happens on these federal lands, is often the harbinger of what's to come for private lands as well. The federal government, bless them, they continue to try to have an expanded federal nexus. Their entire goal is to continue pushing boundaries. And so if they get away, if they are successful in having these kind of big, sweeping changes, and they're not checked either by Congress or by stakeholders, they're emboldened. And so then we see more regulatory creep coming. It doesn't matter whether you're a producer in Washington or Nevada or Texas or Louisiana or even Virginia. I usually say that, you know, if it's come to a federal landscape, it's coming to private lands near you.
And I'm going to throw this one at you simply because we've talked about the damage from drought, we've talked about the damage from wildfires, and we saw it some last year in New Mexico where once those rains do come back, there's nothing to hold the rain on the side of the mountain, and now you've got mudslides, you've got disasters. Is that something that comes up through the PLC? Is that something that some of your members are concerned about and working towards? Are we seeing some of that?
Well, unfortunately, we do see a lot of that, and it's this knock-on effect, it's this cycle of disaster. And this is why it's so important to have good fire on the landscape or good forage management, fuels management. Hazardous fuel mitigation is typically what we call it. Because you enter this cycle of you have a lot of rain. This is great. You have a lot of forage. But if you don't have natural grazing animals and you don't reduce that forage, it becomes wildfire fuel. And then when it becomes wildfire fuel, it burns hot, it burns fast. And especially if there is a catastrophic buildup of those things that burn, you see significant soil impacts. Nothing can grow in that soil. It's sterile. And so you just have bare topsoil. Eventually the rains come again and you have those slides that happen that cause even more damage. But worse yet, you're also losing that organic matter where you could grow additional forage into the future. So on federal lands, that's a huge concern because it's the agency's primary responsibility, whether it's the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service, to do that post-fire remediation. And when it's not done, or when it's not done correctly, you see this cycle of burn, slough, overgrowth of invasive species, burn, slough, and the cycle continues. Interrupting that cycle with better policy, with better prioritization of funding, and improved management tools that include grazing, I mean, that's our playbook year to year. That's the thing that we focus on, that cycle we focus on every single year. We make progress, and we make incremental progress, but it's going to take concerted effort from the agencies and from our stakeholder partners to make sure that all of those changes stick over time.
Caitlin, it's always good to see you. Thanks for your insight on this, and we wish you the best.
Well, thank you so much. It's always good to see you.
Caitlin Glover is the Executive Director for NCBA's Public Lands and for the Public Lands Council in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.